This is being recorded. This is a case in which I'm Michael Wade. I'm chairing the Governance and Policy Committee meeting and calling it to order. And we've had some members drifting in and out, but we do have Bill Ponder and Ken.
Hold on. Of the Tom is coming on right now.
Good.
Bruce Gwynn is on.
Yes.
Tom Rose is now joining us. We're probably going to have to catch up with Richard Shaw later, but we'll now have a call to the public. Do we have anyone from the public that is on? Tom, glad to
I'm
see
here.
You.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you and see you.
It's about computer blow-up time.
Well, Bruce is here, but we can't see him. So you can, you may, I don't know if you can see Bruce on your screen, but he's actually participating.
I'm here.
Yeah, I didn't see him. I saw him earlier, but I can't see him now.
Yeah, okay. Meet up.
And we don't have anyone from the public that is on.
Okay.
And so here's a question, and it's going to be mainly probably toward Bruce, because I believe Bruce and Richard had been at the December 20th 2019 meeting minutes. Well, I think those are the last minutes we have posted for this this committee. And I suppose we could move to have them approved. They are on tape. And so should we just go with the assumption that they're approved? Because
yes,
it has been quite a distance.
Yeah, I moved to approve them.
I'll second.
Unanimous vote to approve the minutes. No corrections on that. And by the way, incidentally, and this is something I've noticed in listening to the minutes on tape, I love the convenience of it. But I think what I'm going to be doing is preparing just kind of a little Reader's Digest summary of what had happened in the meeting. Because that's much easier to go to and say, okay, these were the key decisions they made, as opposed to going back and having to listen to, you know, an hour or maybe hour and a half of tape. I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. On the agenda, and incidentally on that point, I'll be returning to that with a question for Bruce in terms of hanging issues. But on the agenda, I put in the consistency of the AHS bylaws and policies, and I did that mainly because I know Tom Rose has been reviewing the policies and the bylaws and has been noting possible corrections that need to be made or some inconsistencies between the two. Are you pretty close to having completed that project?
Well, I have... actually have several different recommendations, but I'm pretty close to complete. Some of the situations are going to be dependent on what we really want to do with the policies versus bylaws, because the other issues that we're looking into elections and chapter roles come back in, but I can match pretty much within a couple of weeks or less the two existing documents that we have and come up with a solution, either a solution or recommendations to match. We can either match policies to meet bylaws or bylaws to meet policies.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way is to convert your policies to match the bylaw, because it only takes a 10-day notification before a board meeting and vote. The bylaws change takes 30 days notification. So
okay.
I can make a recommendation in either direction.
What I would request, and anybody else can jump in on that, is that prior to our next meeting, and I've already sent out some notices of some possible dates for follow-up meetings, I think going through April, if you can send us a copy of the items that you have kind of on your list as to, with regard to possible cleanup things and inconsistencies, then when we get together at our next meeting, we make that an agenda item, and we can kind of walk through and say, what do we want to approach it via the bylaws or via the policies? And it's my understanding of looking at policies and bylaws that if there's a conflict between a policy and a bylaw, the bylaw in general is going to win.
Yeah.
So it's the,
my thought too.
Yeah.
The policy is a function of an application of the bylaws.
Yeah. So you'll have it's kind of like in baseball, tie goes to the runner, tie goes to the bylaws in that situation.
I can have that ready before, what I'll do is I'll go ahead. I can either send it to you and you can forward, or I can send it to everyone.
Yeah. Well, why don't you? It'd be in preparation of a board or of a committee meeting. Why don't you send it to either Bill or Kim? Which one would you? And then you can send it on to the rest of us, because it'd be preparation for the meeting.
Yeah, that would be preferable there, Michael, if you guys used us as a conduit to disseminate information so you didn't run afoul of the open meetings laws.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's
okay, so then it'll go to Bill Ponder then.
Yes, goes to Bill Ponder. That'd be very helpful. I understand also Jim Schnitzer is going to be proposing some changes in the role of the treasurer and the finance committee. And I want to follow up with him to make sure he has his stuff in writing. And then there were some follow-up items that Linda had mentioned regarding the board vote on the change of the date of the annual meeting. And that's going to be on our list to address as well. But I've got to go back over those notes as well for the coming meeting. Is there anything else that we need to address at this point in terms of consistency of the bylaws and the policies? Something jumps out?
From my point of view, I don't think there is. If I can, I think the main thing is to just get a comparison and basically an individual recommendation, but get it to the governance committee to look and evaluate the recommendations or make a discussion on what we're going to recommend to the board.
That'll be very helpful.
Okay.
Bruce, do you have anything to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
We have Bill, Kim, anything to add on that?
No.
Great. Well, then when you look at item B, in terms of identification of pending policy documents, a question I have, and it probably Bruce is the person who's kind of on the spot with this, is do we have, and I'd asked Linda about this earlier, as to whether she thought of any pending policy documents. She couldn't think of any, but I was listening to that tape of that, December 20th, 2019 meeting. And there were items related to, of course, the 1107 thing is going to be coming up at the board meeting on Friday. There were also items back then concerning that two-tiered program with the institutional membership levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question there was, has that thing been put to bed? Is that established? The other question was, there was discussion in that meeting about changing the policy vis-a-vis free admission for veterans, active duty military personnel, and retired veterans. And I can't recall, is that in our policy right now, our written policy?
That was approved.
I don't believe it's in the written policy from what I recall. However, just reviewing some of the board of directors minutes, there was a approval of that motion on the directors, in the board of directors at some moment last, I believe last, try to remember what time it was.
It was probably,
I think it was in the fall last year.
But Bruce, you recall that being approved?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
It was a pretty good discussion about it, and we came to the conclusion that's what we wanted to do there.
I think that was...
Is that the January board meeting?
January of...
2020?
2020, yeah. I've got it right here. Governor's coming here for approval.
Okay, well, here's the thing I'm thinking, and I think you're probably right. It's probably
I don't have time to read it quite fully right now, but I know it was in the, I think, yeah. Policies arise keeping other agencies practice. Active and retired veterans that have an ID will be admitted with no charges.
So here's the thing I'm kind of wondering is whether we have some policies that have been approved but have not been written. They're alive and well out there. They're being practiced. But we don't, if you were to say, is that in our policy manual? We'd probably say, no, it's not really there.
I don't know.
Okay. I can tell you fairly quickly here because I'm looking at the policy manual. Most of this covers other issues, finance, governance, publications, outreach.
Okay. Well, we can search for that. We can put that on our kind of list. But then that raises, you know, the additional question of is there some other policy kind of adopted and it just wasn't written down?
And, it's not a written part of the policy. It wouldn't have changed. I think it was just as a board grant, basically, from what I can gather here.
Hmm.
Employee directors.
I think it was started with the Medal of Honor.
Right. No, it's not written in the policy that is, but we can, that can be a recommendation.
Okay. Do you know of any other items that might be pending out there? Anything that we really need to address at this stage? I know I've gotten kind of a list from Linda Whitaker of items to address, and that's why we'll be setting some additional meetings. So on item B, in terms of identification of pending policy documents, are we squared away on that for now?
Yep.
Okay. Then we look at C, pending bylaws changes regarding board elections. And I got a phone call yesterday from Kelly Corsett. And I've talked with Linda about this earlier, but the Kelly's chairing kind of a working committee with Robert Ballard and Tom Foster on drafting some language with regard to board elections. And as I understand it, one of the issues that may be addressed, and I don't know if they're ultimately going to address this, would be in terms of, say, timing of declarations of candidacy. Because we've had nominations from the floor, which happened to be relatively easy in the old member appointed and elected days. But now, with the most recent election, there's the question of, can you get the candidacies declared early so people can know who all is about going to be on the ballot? Because it's gotten a little more complicated, but we'll have to see what they come up with. They're working on something. Kelly said, and I think this is a thing we need to ponder a little bit, but he said that their plan was to send their document to us. And of course, there's the option of sending the document to the full board. Is it your sense that you would like them, and you could argue, well, they should have started at governance, but, you know, that's kind of water under the bridge. Would you want them to send it to us, or do you want to just have them go ahead and send it to the full board? What is your sense on that?
I think that we will limit a whole lot of discussion if it comes to us first.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the goods, the bads, and the uglies.
Yeah.
Try to get that cleaned up as much as possible, then take it to the board and try to limit that amount of it. Try to keep it to within 2 or 3 hour discussion.
It might have to jettison some board members on that, but it, yeah, I think there's a lot of damage to that. What do you think, Tom? Anything come to mind? Just a question there, Tom. Do you think that Bruce, are you in with Bruce's idea? We should tell him just, hey, send it to governance.
In regards to the board,
the
election.
The elections policy.
Yes.
Yeah, the election. The main thing that I looked at is with the problem there is, getting an open field and people that you want to, that are going to throw their hat in the ring, so it were. There's no real policy or allowance in the board, in the bylaws that will say that, if you want in, when do you do it? We don't have deadlines, for making those things known. All it does is say that, any board member can express their desire to be an officer of the board, and they just need to make known, but no time frames, no procedures.
And well, I think that we should have them submit it to us. That'll give us a chance to
right
over it, and as Bruce noted, we may be able to streamline.
Yeah, and
that the board level.
That would help. The only other thing is that there still has to be an option for a nomination from the floor by the general membership.
Yeah, and that's going to be a tricky part of it. So that's
yeah, the thing there is that. Mm-hmm. In the number of years that I've been to the meetings, there has never been a nomination from the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
I was elected on a nomination from the floor.
Yeah, that was before my time in there, I imagine. But anyway, I think what we need to look at in the bylaws change for the elections is nominees or interested parties notify within a certain period of time before the election,
mm-hmm.
Preferably the first of the year with an April election. And it should come to the governance committee. And then once that's done, the governance committee can present a list of names and the positions that are attached to those names to the board as a whole, the meeting before that the election comes up, and then there should be possibly an option there during the board meeting for someone to at least say, oh, I didn't know or I should have done.
Well, it's going to be fun to see what they come up with, but
yeah.
I'll touch base with Kelly and I'll try to nudge him on that because I think they may be relatively close to getting a draft at the very least.
Right.
And then we'll get that scheduled into one of our meetings. On the item D regarding executive committee actions on chapter roles, this is, I know that in listening to that December of 2019 governance committee meeting, the issue of 1107 was discussed, some of us, we start having flashbacks whenever we hear 1107 funding. And so we've got that thing coming up anyway at the full board meeting. And so it looks like what one of the items that's going to be a big item is the role of the chapters. And I do want to kind of give a heads up, because an item that I think we may want to discuss at our next governance committee meeting, and we can build upon what is discussed, because it's going to be a discussion item only at the Friday full board meeting, is the role of the chapters. And I just wanted to drop a thought that in looking over the chapters for years, and you know, having served at the chapter level, one of the things that has become very apparent is that chapter boards are not going to write big checks. Chapter boards many times are going to have some of them are going to be more successful than others at getting membership. But even nowadays with membership, the cost of membership is a relatively high one for a lot of people, and that's going to be a bit of a challenge. But one thing I think we may want to explore at the governance level in terms of how it could relate to some of these other items would be the role of the chapter as a relationship builder. Because when you look at so many of these chapters over the years, one of the key elements is they do have ties to the community. And they do have a lot of influence in certain elements of the community. And so I would just ask if you can kind of keep that in the back of your mind, because what we have done as an organization, as it strikes me, we focused a lot strictly on whether a person is a member. And when you consider that, that can be kind of exclusive in that if you're not a member, we're really not paying that much attention to you unless you walk in the door of a museum or you attend an event. Or if you have been a member and you leave, we don't keep in touch with you. And so if we may want to, and this would be an item we can discuss in the wake of the meeting on Friday, we may want to consider an approach in which the chapters will foster relationships with individuals where the person is not necessarily a member. And they're a person, however, interested in the success of the Historical Society, they're interested in Arizona history, but the chapter helps to establish and maintain those ties. And I know there's one museum in the Midwest where they have a rule that they'll keep track of people who are not members. You know, they're not paying anything. But they invite them to events, they let them know about different items in Arizona history, and of course, what they're doing is they're creating a recruitment pool for members. Because many of those people, the closer they get to the organization, they like what they see, they may eventually become members. But nonetheless, this is something that could be significant in terms of the Historical Society, because if you consider, we always have difficulty recruiting members, but you can imagine the impact we would have, say, with the state legislature if we had 15,000 people on our list as being supporters. And they don't, you know, we may just have their email address, but they're interested in Arizona history. They want to be supportive. But you've got 15,000 people who aren't really paying anything, but they're being told about our events. They're being sent information on membership, and they really are a potential pool for a closer relationship. So I just toss that out at this stage to tuck in the back of your mind. Any other comments on that or related issues?
Yeah, Michael, the Yuma County Fair Board has a kind of a similar model here. It's called the Yuma County Fair Foundation. And that's how I got sucked into that one. I went out and helped one day with a 4-H event. Next thing I know, I was elected to the foundation, which was nothing more than 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
Those 40 people were called upon to help put on the Yuma County Fair when it became time. They were called upon to show up for a steak dinner before and have a nice time, and they all got free parking passes inside the fairgrounds. It's amazing what you'll do for 20 years for a free parking pass. But anyway, that group of 40, you could watch them, and that's where we pulled our board members. Because there were some that worked and some that just wanted the steak dinner. And all 40 of those and their wives or husbands became involved. So also we have 80 people working strong, and it's still a strong model today. So you're kind of talking about the same thing. And I can see where, and we've talked about for this chapter down here, is that we should have a foundation that we pull our board members from that would be clamoring to get on there, so to speak. So it's a good model. I like that.
I think that's very interesting. It's nice to see, you know, you have really a hands-on example of, mm-hmm. of that sort of approach.
Yes.
Because, you know, we've got us, it's the old game of if you keep on doing what you've been doing, you'll keep on getting what you've been getting.
Absolutely.
And so we are able to alter this a little bit, but let's plan on kicking that around at our next meeting.
Okay.
And we'll try to see if we can get Richard Shaw in here. And I know Richard had some connection problems even before, I think, this meeting, because I sent him some links, and he had difficulty reaching some links that somehow I was able to reach. But are there any other issues that you believe we should be considering at future meetings? Does anything come to mind right now?
Not right now, no.
Okay. Well, Bill and Kim, do you have anything to add?
Not at the moment. This is an indoctrination meeting for us as well, so we're just listening.
Well, in my opinion, if we can keep these as casual as possible and as short as possible, then, the fact that we're going to have a series of these meetings should make it as painless as possible. But I want to thank all of you, and we'll track down Richard and get him briefed, and I'll follow up with a summary of items, some quick notes on that. This meeting's adjourned.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Kim,
thank you, Michael.
Tom, good to see you.
See you guys.
Take care.
Bye.